This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. This week, the Associated Press reported North Carolina will lose $3.7 billion over a period of 12 years because of HB2. The AP's report comes after the NCAA threatened to withdraw all future championship games from North Carolina until 2022, unless that bill is repealed. Prominent Republican leaders from the North Carolina General Assembly have taken the reins, and they are working to rewrite the bill. House Speaker Tim Moore says the new draft bill will retain language included in the original law surrounding the use of public bathrooms. To break down what's going on behind the scenes in the state legislature is WNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBeery. Hello, Jeff.
Well, hello, Frank.
Let's start with that AP report. How did they get the $3.7 billion over 12 years? Where did that figure come from?
So a couple of Associated Press reporters took a look at all of the various projected losses that would happen over 12 years. And this is a bit of a presumption, of course, because we have no idea what's going to happen in the next few weeks, let alone the next 12 years. I mean, the courts could weigh in. Lawmakers could perhaps do something. But they're looking at events that would be lost. They're looking at tax revenue that will not come. Tourism that is going to be lost. When we think about basketball events, we think about Bruce Springsteen concerts, and also there have been job expansion plans, PayPal and Deutsche Bank being the two most well-known or notorious, I think, over the last year that didn't come because those corporations took an outward, a vocal stand against HB2, and they also factored in those salaries and lost wages. That's how they arrive at this number of nearly $4 billion, $3.7 billion, I believe it is, and that's where they stand. The Republicans, of course, were critical of that report and critical of those numbers.
Well, interestingly enough, the report that the AP put out was based only on those companies that announced withdrawals, states that have announced they will not send their employees here on any kind of workshops or retreats, conventions that have been canceled. So anything that was publicly announced or known, that's where they come up with $3.7 billion. Interestingly enough, in that report, Brian Moynihan, the CEO of Bank of America in Charlotte, said what we don't know is all of the corporations and all of the decisions that are being made that will not be publicly announced because of the reputation of North Carolina as having passed this discriminatory bill, discriminatory according to the many, many corporations that have criticized HB2.
Absolutely. And there, I don't know of any corporations or expansion efforts that have taken place over the last 12 months where there has been an announcement and somebody said, we're coming here because of HB2. We're coming here because we believe in this measure and we wanted to expound or, create jobs here because of this. Perhaps there are entities, to be fair, that have been attracted by this, but certainly not any that have vocalized that.
Right. But the $3.7 billion is very conservative since we won't know how many are not coming here and aren't going to tell anybody. So let's talk about where we're headed, because the big news or the latest news, of course, is the NCAA, which has been saying for a long time, we're coming up with our five-year plan. We're announcing that plan April 18th, where we're going to put our championship games between now and 2022. And you're not going to be on in North Carolina if you've got that bill on your books. Where do we stand with the NCAA's request to North Carolina to pull that bill or not see championship games for the next 5 years?
Well, at first it was a March 1st deadline where North Carolina needed to do something, lawmakers here with House Bill 2. Then it was March 15th and then April 1st. And now we're hearing April 18th is the final deadline. And I tend to think that that target is firm because history indicates that they do announce these in the spring and they do need to go ahead and announce these. Some of the conversations I've had, I mean, it sounds like they have narrowed many of these championship sites and they're waiting to see if North Carolina does make some sort of change and they would slot the state for some of these championship events. Some of them, major sports. I'm talking about men's basketball, that being the biggest one, and also some sports that are, that are events that don't generate as much money and revenue and individuals coming in. So, there are lots of moving targets here. Right. You know, what is attainable from a legislative standpoint? Is that deadline firm? But it certainly feels like this is, the third or the fourth time that NCAA deadline has kind of lingered here. And we should note that the Republicans, some Republicans are not particularly moved by the NCAA. They say that report that came out yesterday talking about that big sum of money is just the tiniest blip on the radar of North Carolina's overall economy. The Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, who we should note is most likely running for governor in 2020, he was critical of that report and said that, you know, the NCAA is a tiny step, a tiny event in what is happening in the state, and that over that 12-year period, North Carolina is going to have an economy of about $6 trillion, and that some of these financial figures are getting overblown. So that's kind of the timeline of things. We do know that no bill has been introduced at this point, and conversations, as they have been for months now, continue in caucus and behind closed doors.
Republicans obviously are sensitive to the damage this has done to the state because, again, we don't know how many billions will get lost that we'll never hear about, and the overall damage to the reputation of the state. So they're sensitive. Chuck McGrady, a Republican, offered a bill that would have repealed HB 2 and replaced it with some other language. We know that never. Tell us the status of that bill. Where is that bill right now?
The House Bill 186 is dead. That's not going anywhere. Chuck McGrady, who is a Republican from the western part of the state, was trying to lead those efforts, and he has effectively been cut out of the negotiations. A prominent House member named David Lewis, the rules chair, kind of the right-hand man to the speaker, has also been moved off of those bills, off of the negotiation efforts. Now, on one hand, you could say that's because they failed, it didn't work well. You could also say this is because you needed fresh blood in the negotiations. I think there's also some pressure on the speaker, on the Senate pro tem, Phil Berger, to get out in front of this. I mean, Cooper, the governor, Democratic Governor Roy Cooper, has been very vocal in this. So you have more of the power players kind of owning this, or at least in the legislature now, in Berger and in Moore. One of the things that struck me is that if Chuck McGrady's not leading the cause, you're less likely to have Democratic support because he's sort of purple, if you will, and he has Democratic allies. Tim Moore and Senator Phil Berger, they don't have very many, if any, Democratic allies. So I'm interested to see if, in fact, we see a bill, if it moves forward, and what kind of Democratic support, if any, it receives, because we've been talking about, you know, the need for bipartisan compromise on this. But the indication right now is that we might be drifting a little bit further to the right. Yes.
Yeah. But think about that, because you wouldn't need friends in the Democratic Party if you're Tim Moore or Phil Berger, since you have a veto-proof majority in the legislature. All you have to do is line up your own party. They can't do that. Tell us why.
Well, they have been able to do anything they have wanted to do since taking over the chamber in 2010 and adding supermajorities in 2012. So for 4 years now, they've had this veto-proof majority. So if they're not doing it, it's because they can't. There aren't enough Republican lawmakers who support a repeal of House Bill 2. Let's remember, and there is some irony here, right? The districts have been, you know, courts have said many of them have been gerrymandered. They've been drawn in such a way that legislative districts here in the state are, many of them, very blue and very red. So there are a number of lawmakers from constituencies that are staunchly conservative. And if they were to vote for a repeal and go back home, there would be some very sharp questions headed their way, and they likely would be signing up for a primary challenge in the next legislative races because they're not being conservative enough. So there's just not enough appetite within those Republican supermajorities to repeal this controversial bill.
That means, as you have reported on this station earlier, that House Speaker Tim Moore and Phil Berger, the leader of the Senate, have to be very careful in how they word a repeal or any legislation that changes HB 2. And you talked to House Speaker Tim Moore describing the language in the new bill that they might propose. Let's listen to what he said.
We're not going to back off protecting the rights of privacy and protection in those bathrooms, changing rooms, and you know, other facilities like that. We're just not going to do that. And I don't think folks want us to do that. The only folks who've asked us to go out and really do that and say no, that you should allow men to use women's changing facilities and all this kind of stuff, are, in my opinion, the ultra-left. And I'm not interested in going down that road, and I don't see us going down that road.
Now, to be fair, Fox, American Airlines, Deutsche Bank, Bank of America, IBM, PNC Financial, Dow Chemical, and Northrop Grumman, to name just a few on the list of corporations that have opposed and criticized HB 2, would not consider themselves the ultra-left. So really, what is it, the challenge that Tim Moore is facing?
He's facing a fractured caucus. Think about the U.S. House and what we just saw with the efforts to pass the Affordable Care Act. It's a big, wide tent, and there are a lot of different kinds of Republicans in the State House and in the U.S. House. And the notion of protecting women and children, I mean, there's no evidence to support that. It's a challenging thing to continue to report on and deal with because there's just no evidence to hold that up. When Chuck McGrady, the moderate Republican, introduced his repeal measure a month or so ago, he was almost dismissive of that in his press conference. He said, I'm not even going to deal with that. That's not what we're talking about here. That's not really what's at the heart of this issue. And I think if you look at these ongoing failed negotiations, there have been numerous failed negotiations in the North Carolina House. I think that one of the things they're trying to do is they're trying to get anything through. They're trying to push through some kind of measure, get it to the Senate, and then they're hoping to get it to the governor. They would like to put the pressure at the feet of the governor so that if Governor Roy Cooper vetoes something, they can say, oh, well, we tried. We tried our best, and he's the one who's holding up this effort here. And then it becomes a war of messaging and words and who's really doing what. But I think that is some of the motivation right now.
All right. So can you tell if there is anything that will actually reach the floor of those chambers, let's say by the middle of April?
It's a good question, and I could say yes or I could say no, and I don't know. If I were a betting man, I would probably keep my money in my pocket at this point. I wouldn't wager either way. How's that?
All right, that's fair and legal, by the way. So I'm glad chose that route, Jeff Tiberi, WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Thank you, Jeff.
Always fun. Thanks, Frank.
Just ahead, how Muslims are depicted in the media and how some journalists are working to make sure that stereotypes are not reinforced. You'll hear about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.